You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this podcast. My name is Robert Toto. I'm a professor of internal medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. And I'm joined by my friend, Dr. George Backus. George, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a professor of medicine and director of the American Heart Association Comprehensive Hypertension Center at the University of Chicago. And I think we're going to have a very nice conversation today about some very new findings.
Right. So let's jump right in. George, you were a lead author on the Fidelio study, and that's what we're here to talk about. And what I'd like to do is begin by giving the audience some background on, you know, what is the design and conduct of the Fidelio study, just so they can have a foundation here for the discussion we're going to have.
Sure. So Fidelio was really part of a finerenone program. Finerenone is a new novel non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist. And we designed a program around this. And what I mean by that is we had the Fidelio study, there was a Figaro study, which was a sister study, and then we had the Fidelity single patient analysis of all of the trials together. And the point was Fidelio was a renal endpoint trial in diabetes. Figaro was a cardiovascular endpoint trial in diabetes, and then Fidelity integrated both of them in one analysis to look at the spectrum of the effect of this class of agents in diabetes with kidney disease and high cardiovascular risk. So Fidelio involved people with average GFRs around 44, albuminuria in the range of 850 milligrams per day, and clearly a higher cardiovascular risk. We excluded heart failure, so there was no HFrEF in there. And the reason for that is because spironolactone, the steroidal MRA, is mandated there. And we did not want to cloud the analysis with that. So those people were excluded. Otherwise, that was the study group that we had. It was over 5,000 patients, around 5,200 plus that we studied. And the median follow-up was around 2.5 years, 2.6 years.
Right. And just to mention, all the patients that you enrolled in the study also had to be on maximum dose of an ACE inhibitor or angiotensin receptor blocker. And the reason I bring that up is because I just wanted to have you delve just briefly into the rationale for adding a mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist onto that kind of background in this patient population, not the HFrEF population where we know, for example, spironolactone is shown. But, you know, there's a, because that's been, you know, an area where we've been working for many years to try to make some progress, and you finally succeeded.
Well, I want to thank you very much for bringing that up. And I apologize. It's an oversight on my part, because that's one of the distinguishing features of this study is we mandated that people come in, not just on an ACE or an ARB, and most or not all previous diabetes studies, but you had to be on the maximal tolerated doses. Why? Because in all previous renal outcome studies, it was people at the maximal doses that got the benefit, not people at low doses or people that took it for a while and stopped. So that was the main reason that you needed to be on. And unlike previous studies, spironolactone, one of the major reasons for mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists to be useful here is because there's a lot of inflammation in diabetes. I don't think I have to tell anybody that. And the agents, the traditional agents, the RAS blockers, even the SGLT2s, do not do a great job of quelling inflammation. They reduce it, there's no question, but they don't really make it go away. The non-steroidal MRAs add to that benefit in terms of being anti-inflammatory and ultimately anti-fibrotic if you wait long enough. And so that was the reason to do this. And the advantage we had with finerenone is just like the rest of the family, it does cause elevations in potassium, but the magnitude did not seem to be as great. So that was one advantage.
Right. And I think that's a key point, especially because of the results of the that you were able to demonstrate with the study. So thinking about that, you gave us a really nice background on the design of the Fidelio. So this was study design-wise, it was randomized, double-blind, and you had, what, 5,700 patients or so?
Yeah, it was 5,600 and change, and it was randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled.
And what about the ranges of the GFR? You mentioned the albuminuria, and because it was a pretty broad group that you studied in terms of their GFR levels.
Yep, it was. We had GFRs down to 25 that you could get into the study. And on the high end, we had GFRs into the 60s. The range of albuminuria in this study, you could actually come in if you had a lower GFR with microalbuminuria. So there was a subgroup of people that were in this study that had, in fact, microalbuminuria or low levels, less than 300.
Right.
There were also people at 2 or 3 grams. So, you know, it was really a huge range, both in GFR and in albuminuria.
Yeah, so one of the things that always comes up with these studies in diabetes, as you well know, is, you know, the control of the other comorbidities like glycemic control and blood pressure control. And I assume all that, those were pretty much evened out with the randomization in the study.
They were absolutely evened out. In fact, the average hemoglobin A1C, as I recall, was in the low 7s. Yeah. I want to say 7.2, something like that. And we actually looked at lipid management, and because I recall something like close to 3/4 of the people were on lipid lowering therapy. So these were very well controlled people. In fact, they came in with blood pressures of 136 systolic. So it was a pretty reasonably well controlled population.
Right. And you, because of the care and concern for the potential for hyperkalemia, I believe you had a cutoff for potassium level to enter the trial as well.
Well, it's true. The when you were screened, you could not have a potassium greater than 4.8. You had to be below 4.8.
Yeah.
However, there was a subset of people that screened at that level, but when they came back to get baseline measurements, they were actually at 5. And those people were allowed into the study. And this is why actually the FDA, when they labeled the drug, allowed you to use this up to a potassium of 5.
Yeah, great. So you wanted, this is a perfect segue into what the key findings are that you wanted to discuss today about Fidelio.
So clearly the drug reduced progression of kidney disease in a significant way, and it was statistically significant, and also reduced cardiovascular events in a significant way, primarily driven by heart failure. So it wasn't like it reduced all cardiovascular events. Heart failure or prevention of hospitalization for heart failure was really the key finding, along with slowed progression of kidney disease. And there was a significant risk reduction. I don't remember offhand, I want to say 21% risk reduction for kidney disease progression and 18% risk reduction for cardiovascular disease. But bottom line is they were both significant. And the cardiovascular events, by the way, yes, they were a secondary endpoint, but they were a pre-specified secondary endpoint. So we statistically tried to power for cardiovascular events in that subgroup.
Yeah. So it was really a major achievement to get these 5,700 patients through this trial, high doses of ACEs or ARBs, and then on the mineralocorticoid receptor antagonist, the nonsteroidal finerenone, and getting through the trial, quite a feat and quite an impressive result. And so the safety-wise, things looked pretty similar from my recollection, and the main difference really being the hyperkalemia, if I'm not mistaken. And even that, you want to comment on that? Because I think it's important for the listeners to know about the magnitude.
I agree. The beauty of the study, which in some ways to our amazement, there was no AKI, acute kidney injury, and there were no increases in other things like urinary tract infections and things like that. Hyperkalemia was the major issue. However, it was not out of control. In fact, we did not check, based on the phase two data, we did not check potassium for 1 month after you got into the trial. Now, if you're really worried about potassium, you're not going to wait a month to check it. So clearly that was a plus. Now, in addition to that, if you look at discontinuations, there were about twice as many discontinuations in the finerenone group as in the placebo group. But even then, we're talking about 1% and change versus 2% and change in terms of people discontinuing the study. So it was not anything egregious. Was there use of potassium binders during the study? And the answer is yes, it was left up to the discretion of the investigators. However, having said that, a minority of people, I can't remember exactly what the number was, but it was way less than 100. And if you have 5,700 people, that's not too many. And even then, what were they using? They were using K-Exalate. So, and as you know, and as I'm sure the listeners know, that drug can't be tolerated more than a few days. So it's not anything that was used chronically and for long-term periods of time. The other very interesting thing that's also been seen in the SGLT2 sub-analyses was that if you were using an SGLT2, the subgroup that was on an SGLT2, you had less risk of hyperkalemia. So that was a double plus with the benefits of SGLT2 and giving you extra protection against hyperkalemia. So that's another important finding.
That is really terrific because that's something people wonder about. And it actually segues me right into my next question because I was going to say, the Fidelio was published on the heels of the DAPA CKD and, Credence came out a year or so before that. Yep. But they were only, DAPA and Fidelio were only separated by a few months in the New England Journal of Medicine. And so, I don't know that you can really compare, the Fidelio to Credence or DAPA CKD, but you may want to, but maybe you do. And how would you put that at least in perspective, put Fidelio DKD in perspective in comparison to the SGLT2s, which you just commented on?
So this was a curious, interesting question because we were asked by a number of people, well, your percent risk reduction was only 21, they got 30, and so you're not as good and all that, which we thought was totally stupid from a pure clinical trial standpoint. So what we did with the help of Rajiv Agarwal, who really led this, is got together the statisticians and we did an analysis, a proper analysis, head-to-head, comparing Fidelio to Credence. And in fact, it's published in NDT. Now, what did we do? We went through and actually did a propensity match analysis. I guess that's the best term for it. Mm-hmm. To actually look at the people that had similar levels of heart disease, similar levels of kidney disease, similar interventions, and literally tried to match everything up. When you match everything up and do the analysis, Credence gave you 30% risk reduction, and Fidelio, you got 28% risk reduction. So the bottom line is there's no meaningful difference between the two. And that's the essence of the paper. So, the notion is, well, let's see, do you pick SGLT2 or do you pick finerenone? Well, what do you pick? Well, here's the thing. The bottom line is obviously there's a lot more data with SGLT2s and they're in the guidelines. But guess what? In the ADA 2022 guidelines, finerenone's in there. So I think nephrologists have to think about this and diabetologists have to think about this in a totally different mindset, not picking this drug versus this drug, but doing it as my friend John McMurray says, a pillars of therapy approach, where you have the RAS blockade, now you've got SGLT2, and now you have the nonsteroidal MRA finerenone. And we may, in a couple of years, have the GLP-1s. So we are right in an expansive phase in nephrology, something we've waited 20 years for, as you know. And this is the way you got to think about
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I agree with John's approach as well. And I think that this pillars is already here for nephrology. Well, I'd just like to, you know, thanks for that great review of Fidelio, George. You want to talk a little bit more about Figaro and then Fidelity, because, you know, I don't want to leave those behind, because in some ways that's really, I think, going to potentially expand the our horizons in terms of where Fidelio fits into the armamentarium across the spectrum of people with diabetic kidney disease.
Sure. Well, Figaro very quickly was a larger trial of 7,000 plus people. And these were people with cardiovascular disease. They were much more on the line of cardiovascular disease than renal disease. The average GFR going into the study was in the low 60s, unlike the renal study. The majority of these people had microalbuminuria, so they didn't have heparinuria. And so there was really an overlap, if you did a Venn diagram, of both, small subgroup of both. But the Figaro trial was purely cardiovascular outcomes. That was what it was powered for. It was also powered for renal outcomes. And again, very important finding of reduced cardiovascular outcomes, again, driven by hospitalization for heart failure. And the renal outcomes, quite interestingly, and the nephrologist should find this interesting, is we did a 40% reduction in GFR decline, and that just missed significance in Figaro. We did a doubling of creatinine, however, and that was wildly significant. And so it's important, I'm going to just put this in here, for the listener to know that the FDA, along with a huge group of us back in 2012, looked at this whole issue of slopes and change in GFR and what have you. And if you have an initial decline in GFR, as you do with finerenone, as you do with SGLT2s, as you do with RAS blockers, doubling of creatinine or a 57% reduction is really the only thing that's acceptable. Everything else is interesting, suggestive, but you really want that doubling of creatinine at 57%. And we achieved that in Figaro. That's very important. Now, Fidelity. Oh, the other last thing I'll tell you about Figaro is the people that got the greatest benefit were the people that had high cardiovascular risk and microalbuminuria. And they had an over 30% reduction in ESKD.
That's really impressive. One thing I just want you to bring it out. You know, when people do studies in diabetic kidney disease, regardless of the intervention, you want to know, well, what was the glycemic control? Did any of this have to do with better glucose control, better blood pressure control? So I think it's important to comment on that.
Yeah. Again, just like in Fidelio, bottom line, there were no differences in glycemic control, no differences in really blood pressure or any of the classic risk factors that you would imagine would influence this. Right. And in fact, the conclusion of Figaro, with Bert Pitt being the first author on this, cardiologist, well-known cardiologist from University of Michigan, basically said, well, cardiologists have to start measuring albuminuria now, because that's really the key. Well, that's a big, big news. So, yeah. But it's important based on these findings. And to carry that over into the Fidelity analysis. Now, Fidelity analysis, you were talking about 11,100 plus patients that were in both trials. And everything is there. Guess what? Doubling of creatinine, you got a significant reduction in progression in both trials when you put them together. When you look at heart failure hospitalizations, significant reduction. And the important thing is when you look at ESKD standalone, 20% risk reduction. So I don't think there's any question that these drugs bring to the table cardiorenal protection, and not at a big premium. I forgot to tell you that in Figaro, hyperkalemia was by the way, yes, it was twice as high. What are we talking about? 0.6 to 1.2% of 7,200 people. Nothing I'm going to really get excited about. So again, something to keep in mind.
Right. So, you know, you've painted a really good picture about where Fidelio fits in, because it's pretty broad. So, you know, it looks to me, when I look at Fidelio and Figaro taken together, and as you pointed out in the fidelity analysis, it really does cross the spectrum, not entirely, of people with EKD. But, you know, so when the question comes up, like, who's likely to benefit from, you know, finerenone, you can include a lot of patients with diabetic kidney disease. It's not so narrow as when you and I did the renal studies and the IDNT studies back in the late 90s and early 2000.
Well, I think the other point, and you raise a very important point here, is the notion that, well, you have to have advanced kidney disease. You don't. They were people with GFRs in the 70s, high 70s, that got benefit. The people, by the way, one of the criticisms could be, well, they had microalbuminuria. How do you even know they had diabetic disease? Because we checked retinopathy. If you had microalbuminuria and didn't have retinopathy, you couldn't get in the study. Mm-hmm. So we went with the classic criteria. So these are important little by the ways that I think, you know, reinforce the quality of the data.
Yeah. And you mentioned the pillars coming up. So, you know, I think it's pretty clear that finerenone can be used in combination with SGLT2s. And as you pointed out, in both Figaro and Fidelio, some of the patients were on SGLT2s. And what about the GLP-1s? Because you also mentioned that as maybe down the road, and you may be right, that we'll be looking at that as another pillar. How would you see, you know, finerenone fitting in with that group?
So we actually looked at that, and it turns out that there were substantial number. I mean, in the total, if you look at Fidelity, there were over 800 people that were on SGLT2s out of 11,000. So not a huge number, but nevertheless. Don't forget, by the way, when these studies started, SGLT2s weren't even approved yet. Right. So let's just be clear. But GLP-1s, there's an analysis that's been done with people in GLP-1s. And again, the GLP-1s make things better. And there's a trend that they did, but it's not significant, just like SGLT2s. Yes, they made things better, not significant. The SGLT2s did help, but the potassium GLP-1s did not. So I think the notion, the big issue that I would want to see is GLP-1s really good for cardiovascular risk reduction and some messages about stroke. Neither SGLT2s nor finerenone give you stroke benefit. Could you get a stroke benefit if you combine the two? Well, we don't have enough people to make that statement, but it would be quite interesting to look at that aspect.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that the fact that finerenone is clearly shown benefits for both the kidney and cardiovascular wise now really puts it in the, you know, right up there with the SGLT2s, ACE inhibitors for our armamentarium. So, well, George, thanks very much for reviewing this data with us. And I think it's really helpful to the audience to get your perspective on this. So before we wrap up, I'd just like to ask if there's any other points you'd like to bring up that we didn't address during the podcast here as we wind down.
Well, Bob, thank you very much for having me. And no, I think we did an excellent job of really covering the waterfront on all the major issues. You know, finerenone is effective. The one thing I would say is that what we didn't talk about is, I don't want you to think about this as your mother's Spiro, because it's not. It's anything but. It's distinctly different pharmacologically. It's distinctly different in many ways. And it is not a great blood pressure lowering drug. So if anything you want to compare, you can compare it to a eplerenone, which is far lower in efficacy. But even there, you can't compare. I mean, they're just distinctly different, far better tolerated. So I think we're in a new era, and I think we need to kind of grasp it and move forward with it.
No, I agree. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that finerenone clearly is an advance because of the nature of the molecule for lots of reasons we don't have time to go into, that it does differentiate it from spironolactone. And clearly, we don't have any studies like this with spironolactone. So the success of being able to add an MRA on in this patient population and get a really important result for patients, I think is really setting it apart. And I don't think you can substitute one for the other.
Agreed.
At least for this condition.
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, George. Great to be with you again.
Thank you, Bob. Same here.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.